Part 1. 1. When Madge arrived in Chicago, it was an unusually windless summer day, and she could not take her eyes off the bluest water she had ever seen. She believed she was seeing the ocean for the first time, but she had heard from a woman who had heard from another woman that the ocean stirred waves as tall as trees, and this broad flatness looked like the floor of heaven itself. Surely it marked the end of the earth. Nothing could exist beyond that line where the sky reached down to kiss a shimmering edge. She had only come from Tennessee, but she might as well have come from another country. It would take months to unpack this foreign land, months before she finally ventured out, walking through the retail district, a street along the lake, peering into plate glass windows, men behind wooden carts hawking fruits and vegetables in pitched voices, hackneys, carriages, teams of horses flying madly by in all directions, leaving behind a cloud of dust so thick she could barely see. Signs advertising businesses whose names she could not read. The glance of a woman leaning out of a window. A grand building with wide stone steps leading up to some unimaginable heaven. A new word. Opera. 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 Melting on her tongue. Tree-bordered boulevards. The South Side avenues. The soft glow of gas streetlights. Horse cars lined with narrow benches and shoving crowds. The bolts creaking so loudly she feared the animals would break free and leave the people in the contraption behind. Five flags waving grandly from the top of a building. The crunch of grit between her teeth. Dust rising through her nostrils. She covered her nose and mouth, and as she drew the folded square of cloth from her face, she saw the blood on it, and upon further hurried patting, understood that it came from her nose. "This city sure enough gonna kill me," she thought. Still, she relished every moment. And the water, so many boats and ships like nothing she had ever seen. A city's lines etched by roads and waterways, sweating Irish stevedores unloading lumber schooners while colored men huddled nearby, watching for injury or exhaustion or a skirmish loud enough to send the offenders home. And Madge, amidst it all, daringly alone, a freeborn woman hovering near the pier, watching as passenger pigeons descended by the dozens. She moved about unmolested, freely, wearing a bright orange neck scarf she'd found in the street 2 days before. Back in Tennessee, such a scarf might have been taken for hubris. But in the garish city, colors, even on a Negro woman, were just a quiet wink. She turned, almost walking straight into the wheels of a carriage. The driver shouted at her, and she laughed, reveling in the city's spirit, brimming with the effervescence of the newly baptized, she walked. For a long time, Sadie felt like a visitor to another country. The train had belched her onto the city's shores without so much as kith and kin to greet her, and she'd struggled to find her legs. The place was far enough removed from York to impress upon her the uncertainty of a future without a husband. But it would be some time before she understood that keeping alive the spirits of the lost sat in perfect order within that immortal city. With its tall grain elevators, winding canal, and trestled bridges, it hummed. Draymen and horse cars and lake steamers. Dead rats lining ditches where sludge-filled water traveled on its way to the river. Its fragility, plank roads and leaning shanties, pine sidewalks and marble-faced buildings with wooden shake roofs, subsumed by an ever-increasing sense of its fortitude. Everything, it appeared, coexisted as an irresolvable contradiction, a trait Sadie would come to see in herself as well, long after she'd accepted the place as home.